This show was originally recorded in 2005.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
It's time to hear the other side of the news.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is a gentrification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch's Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen, the camera, the sword, buying coke, buying Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
The other side of the news.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. But do we even know who plants the seeds? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them. They're just selling fruit. Flim flam diagram, data jam, handicap, caught it. Yo, you bought it. My mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby? Till freedom is a rumor.
And we are in studio today with Alice Smith, who is the primary organizer for a group called Hamilton Can. Is that correct, Alice?
Yeah, Can stands for the Hamilton Community Action Network.
So why was the Hamilton Community Action Network started in the first place, and when was it started?
Well, it started, I guess, in my mind in November of 2004. I was at a city council meeting where city councilors, in a tie vote that was later broken by our mayor, Larry Deanney, made a decision to continue with the lawsuits against the federal government for requesting an environmental assessment of the Red Hill Creek Expressway. And further to that, they decided to pursue lawsuits against some of the people that had been involved in the tree sit in the summer of 2004. And it occurred to me at that moment that our city was really being run by lawyers and developers. But that's not how democracy operates.
Corruption is everywhere. Corruption is everywhere. People want a deal or a discount or a steal. Corruption is everywhere.
For the education of those people that are probably be listening to the show, and there will be people that have no idea where Hamilton is and what a Hamilton is, and there's a lot of background. Basically, you're a civics teacher in high school. And
yes.
What we're talking about is democracy here, and on the most basic level, maybe we could give listeners that are out of this area a little bit of insight as to, you know, why these things were happening.
Basically, I just think it's a situation that is repeated in a lot of cities, provinces, probably countries around the world, where we have a system in order to get elected, you need money. And you need a lot of money if you want to have a successful bid to be elected. And that money generally comes from wealthy individuals and corporations. And here in the city of Hamilton, we're certainly no exception. The people that tend to get elected to our city council are the ones with the flashiest signs, the best commercials, the best TV and radio ads, and the nicest brochures. And again, all of that costs money. And where does it come from? In the city of Hamilton, it primarily tends to come from people in the development, construction, and real estate industries. And so when those people get elected, the people that they're really thinking about are not the ones who elected them, but the ones that helped them to get elected. And that's how I explain it to my students in my class when we're talking about democracies. And one of the questions that we often look at in my class is Hamilton a true democracy? Is Ontario a true democracy? And for that matter, is Canada a true democracy? And it's interesting because we learn about all the other types of government that exist in the world. And it's amazing how many kids, grade 10 kids, 15, 16-year-olds, come up with the idea that, you know what, miss? I think Hamilton is actually an aristocracy because you told us that aristocracies are forms of government where the rich people rule. And even though we do get to vote, it's all the rich people who really make all the decisions in this city.
Okay, maybe we should take a little step back from that, and I'm glad that you brought that up because we are comparing what democracy should be and how we're losing it, and we need to know that we're losing it right here at a street level in our city and how we compare to other countries, other provinces, other places in the world. One of the things that I wanted you to maybe go back and talk about, I think it's important for people to know that we elected our current mayor on a vote of 19% of the population of the city.
Yeah.
The mayor she is referring to in this conversation is Larry Deanney.
And that is one of the things that I talk about with my class as well. We talk about that in order for a democracy to be a true democracy, everyone has to be involved. And even though everyone in Hamilton has the opportunity to be involved, very few people actually exercise that right that they have. In fact, the overall voter turnout in the last election was only around 38%. And as you said, only about 19% of Hamiltonians actually voted for our mayor.
Why do you think that is?
Personally, I think that has a lot to do with the fact that there's a lot of people out there who feel disenfranchised, even though they're not. They feel as though the decisions that are always made by the government are never in their best interest, so what's the point? Until they actually see government starting to make decisions that are in their best interest, then they're not going to feel as though their vote really means anything.
We need to turn this around. I understand that. Gee, I get people talking to me about that all the time. What's the point? We get the same sort of representation. How can we change that? And that's, I guess, one of the reasons that you have the CAN Action Group.
Well, I think the way that we can change that is through education. And that really is one of the focuses of CAN, is to educate people about local issues and about the importance of their vote. If we could get voter turnout to 70, 80, 90, and, you know, possibly even 100%, then we could start to see changes, because that is what is going to be required. But in order to do that, we have to empower people. We have to make them realize that their vote can make a difference. And we can only do that through education, through educating them about the issues, through educating them about what different candidates stand for and about the decisions they've made in the past, the decisions that they're promising to make in the future, so that people can go and make cast their ballot for a person that they think will actually start to make decisions that are in their best interests and not their campaign contributors' best interests.
One of the reasons that people are not getting the information, especially in this city, is mainstream corporation media, and we have very limited media in the city of Hamilton. It's what's the population now, 400,000, something like that?
Yeah, close to half a million.
We have one TV station, which is owned by CanWest Global. We have a handful of radio stations, but really only one that does talk and news, and that's 900 CHML. And we have one newspaper. That's it. I mean, we do have other newspapers, but they're tightly controlled. And the Brabant has also been owned by a corporation. I don't know where it's gone now.
It's actually Brabant Papers, the community newspapers you're talking about, are owned by Torstar, but so is our major citywide paper, The Spectator. So all of our media, essentially our print media in the city, is owned by the same company.
So there we have a problem getting the message out. And myself, I say this as much as I can because I want people to realize how much news they don't get. When I sit in City Hall for 4 hours or 6 hours watching discussion and debate over one topic, like maybe the Red Hill Expressway, do we tear down an urban forest to put an expressway through, or something maybe not so controversial, it'll last 4 to 6 hours. There are presenters from the community that only get 5 minutes to speak. What you read and see later on your 6 o'clock news, you're working, so you can't get this information except through the normal channels. You turn on TV 11, you get 3 minutes of a soundbite of an event that was discussed for 4 hours. You get maybe a little bit longer on the radio station and 600 words and maybe an opinion in the Spectator. So the point I'm trying to make is, not only do we have mainstream corporate-controlled media so that only certain messages get through, the nature of that mainstream for-profit media is not able to give the whole message. It can't even get close to giving the message. So a little plug for CFMU, we have a lot of independent sources in the city and groups like yourself and a lot of grassroots groups that started up because of that one specific problem. People don't get the information.
There's no doubt that our grassroots activist community is growing in Hamilton, and that is because people have seen a need. As you know, there are a lot of independent media starting to spring up around the city, print media, radio, and so on. And it is really important for people to look at those alternative sources of media for information, because, as you said, we have two problems here in the city of Hamilton. We have a mainstream media that is tightly controlled by just one or two corporations. And then the other problem, that the debates on the issues really are much longer than what any of those media, even if they were well-intentioned, could possibly devote to them and do those issues justice. Whereas our sort of alternative media tends to take a deeper look at some of those issues and examine them more thoroughly than the mainstream media is able to or willing to do.
Okay, so the grassroots groups are getting information. One of my personal concerns is to keep this radio show going, because there's a lot of poor in the city. We have one in four living below poverty. It's an amazing, staggering amount. We are the city with the largest amount of people living in poverty in Ontario, and in fact, Canada, if you go by the stats.
Wow.
That says quite a bit.
Yeah, no, I was looking at those statistics the other day, and it is very disturbing, and I think that's why these grassroots organizations are so needed in this city. Because, again, if you actually were to look at the people that are not voting, it's those poor people that aren't voting, because they're the ones that feel so disenfranchised, feel like the decisions are not being made in their interests. And they are correct, I think, for the most part, in those observations. And so we need to empower them, we need to educate them, and we need to enlighten them as to what the issues are and how they can go about and start making change. And we're working on that, as I said, through grassroots organizations. And I think all major sort of social revolutions, social changes have come about because of grassroots movements.
What is CAN doing? Can you elaborate on what, not so much the election, the municipal election is coming up within moments, but basically what is CAN doing as you see it? Because you said to me earlier, it started as one thing and it's slightly evolving, and getting back to why you decided we need this group.
Yeah, absolutely. When I started the group, as I told you, the idea for it came about in about November of 2004, and I held the first public meeting at the Central Library here in Hamilton in January of 2005. At the time, the idea that I had in my head was that it would operate similar to a political party, sort of a well-organized political machine that would try to get candidates with similar values, philosophies, and policies elected right across the city. You have to understand, my background was from a major political party here in Canada. I traveled all over the country campaigning for one of the three major parties here in Canada and had a lot of background in that area. And so that was where my ideas came from. But as we continued to meet and hold our meetings throughout the city, and more people came and more people get involved, as you know, these types of grassroots movements sometimes tend to take on a life of their own. And they take on the life of the people that are involved in the organization. And that was really, really important to me from the very beginning, that although I had a certain set of ideas about what I kind of envisioned CAN would become, it was really important that the ideas come from the ground up and not the other way around. And so what CAN has essentially evolved into is an organization that really is working to educate people about local issues, educate people about the decisions that our current and incumbent councillors have made and how they've impacted on the city, to educate people about the councillors or the candidates for council that are running and what their policies are and provide them information about that. And again, to empower people and to encourage them to actually go out and vote on Election Day, November 13th.
You are listening to The Other Side every Tuesday afternoon at noon on 93.3 CFMU FM.
Today's guest is Alice Smith from the activist group Hamilton CAN.
I'm going to go back to one of this list. You went through that list, and let's take them maybe a little bit slower and look at each one. I think one of the most important ones to me is, you said, decisions made and how they impact the community. I think maybe we could talk about a few examples, because we are all facing climate change. We are all facing globalization, marketing that is going to change in the future. We're all going to have to change. So we have to focus on what our local government does when it makes a decision and how it impacts us. And I can immediately see some major flaws as far as climate change.
Absolutely. One of the things that CAN did, as I said, was we held public meetings all throughout the city. And we asked people, what is it that you want for the city of Hamilton? What is important to you? And we came up with these huge laundry lists of ideas. And then we sat down as a group and we decided, okay, how can we organize these so that they make some sense? And we ended up breaking everything down into two major categories: good government and quality of life. And one of the key things under quality of life was protection of the environment. People in Hamilton really are concerned about protecting our environment. And yet a lot of the decisions that our city council is making are decisions that are harming our environment. As I'm sure you're aware, Maggie, I know you're aware, we're facing a peak oil crisis. And a lot of the decisions that our city council are making are decisions that I'm sure in 50 years, future civilizations are going to look back and say, how did they not see that this was a huge mistake at the time, that they were making these kinds of mistakes? How could they not see that urban sprawl and building more roads was a waste of money because the peak oil crisis, for example, was going to lead to such inflated gas prices, such outrageous gas prices, that people wouldn't be able to afford in these live in these huge houses in the suburbs and drive on these highways in their big SUVs? And a lot of other cities are already recognizing that and taking steps to address those issues. And it's not even a matter of Hamilton just standing still. We're moving backwards. While most other cities across this country are recognizing peak oil as a looming crisis, as something that is a reality. This isn't hocus pocus, scary, you know, doomsday type, you know, make believe. This is real. And as I said, most cities are recognizing this now and planning for it. We're moving backwards. We're doing the exact opposite of what we should be doing to address these issues.
Let's give audience listeners that aren't from Hamilton area, let's give them the list and just slowly go through all the things that we have done that are incompatible with our future.
Well, the Red Hill Creek Expressway has already been mentioned here once, and that's an obvious one where we cut down. There's some debate about the number of trees, but the original plan called for the removal of 44,000 trees. The city now claims that they actually removed less than that, but then let's keep in mind they didn't count trees whose trunk was a diameter of less than 1.5 inches. It doesn't matter if it was only a 1-inch diameter, it's still a tree. So the number probably was close to 44,000. Trees are the lungs of our city, and they blasted the largest hole ever in the side of the Niagara Escarpment to build an expressway to bring trucks and more vehicle traffic through our city, thereby increasing pollution in our city. One of the things that I read in the paper the other day that Larry Deanney is a huge proponent of and is talking about in his most recent campaign is advocating for the building of Mid-Peninsula Corridor, which is another highway through our city, which is the last thing that our city needs. We have more roads per capita in Hamilton than anywhere else in Canada. Another decision that our city has consistently been making is to expand our urban boundaries to allow more development outside of our city limits. And this really tests our city in a number of ways. First of all, it reduces the amount of resources that are available for brownfield development and for intensifying development in the core of our city, which is desperately needed. It also requires our city to spend more money on infrastructure going out into those areas of urban sprawl outside of our city. And again, it increases the need for people to drive further distances to get to work, to get to the store, to get to recreation centers, all the types of things that we should be discouraging. We should be planning our city in a way that all areas are sort of multi-use areas where people can walk and ride their bikes and use public transit to get around as opposed to driving their cars.
You were mentioning that our mayor, now he's campaigning for his now 4-year run at mayor instead of 3, which is even more frightening. Talking about the Mid-Peninsula Corridor, now those that don't know Southern Ontario, if you look at a map in Southern Ontario, you will see why people are thinking about this Mid-Peninsula Corridor. There's a little bit of a lip or an arm, let's call it, between the two lakes of Ontario and Erie, between USA and Canada. It's a major transport corridor. Most of our goods are brought in by truck from the States at this moment, and they come from all over the place. We get most of our groceries in the grocery store from California. So the Mid-Penn Highway has been talked about even before Mayor Larry Deanney got elected. And I do believe that this Red Hill Creek Expressway and the subdivision and the suburban spread up there on top of the escarpment, being the top of our mountain here, 1,700 feet in some places, 1,200 in others, it's quite a dramatic drop in height. People were saying we needed this highway to get to the top of the mountain to alleviate pollution, to alleviate the need of, well, we needed growth. We needed to have more housing built, housing starts, but they were monster homes they were talking about. And I think the real reason was so that there would be a corridor link between the Queen Elizabeth Highway and the ports to the Mid-Penn Highway. And I suggest that because in this city, it's really easy to see how the paper trail goes right from the streets of Hamilton and Stoney Creek to the federal government level.
When you're talking, I was just thinking to myself about these types of decisions and the implications they have. A lot of people do feel that these types of things are required for economic development. And I was just thinking back to this movie I saw a few weeks ago, and maybe some of the people that are listening right now have seen this movie as well. It's the one that Al Gore did called An Inconvenient Truth. And in it, he talks about this balancing act between our economy and our planet. And really, it's laughable to me that we could even begin to argue, have arguments about, well, we have to do this for the economy. Really, what good is our economy? What good is money going to be to us if our air is unbreathable, if our water is undrinkable, if the soil in our ground is so drained of nutrients that we can't grow food? We can't eat money. And that goes back to an old Cree saying as well. I've sort of integrated into that. And so that whole argument to me is laughable. Now, we do need to address the economy, and CAN has in its policy platform suggestions for addressing our economy, but they have to be sustainable decisions. They have to be sustainable directions, not things that we can't sustain in the long term. We already, as I said, we know the reality of peak oil. We know the reality of global warming. The decisions that we make have to face this reality. Right now, it's as if our city councilors, our city council, and our mayor are wearing a blindfold and ignoring the reality and just making the decisions that I think are the easiest, the quickest, and will make the biggest buck.
Why do you think you're doing that?
Well, I mean, the obvious one is that the decisions that they're making right now are, for quite a number of them, including our mayor, are in the best interests of the people that contributed to their campaigns. Those decisions are making certain individuals and certain corporations in this city a lot of money. The Red Hill Creek Expressway, the costs on that are already now in around the $300 million mark. So somebody's making a lot of money off of building that expressway. And if you take a look at the list of Larry Deanney's campaign contributors, you'll see that the people that are on that list are also the ones whose trucks are parked beside the construction site at the Red Hill Valley Expressway.
Yeah, so we can talk about that for the benefit of those who are out of the Hamilton area. Mayor Larry Deanney, I think, was the first, or maybe the one with the most, charges of election overpayment towards his campaign, totally against the rules of the Municipal Elections Act, which are fairly simple and straightforward and easy to read. And Mayor Larry Deanney, He's not a newbie. He's been on council in Stony Creek for a number of years. So I personally don't think there's any excuse for him to say he didn't know what was going on. He was checked by, actually it took a local person, Joanna Chapman, a Dundas bookstore owner, to go through the list, and she very quickly and easily saw who these people were in the names. As you say, you'll see the relationship. And she could easily find the overpayments, and they were all tied to trucking companies and developers, for the large part, builders. She asked City Council to investigate this. She gave our councillors the option on what to decide about this major infraction, and they hedged. I think it's fair. We don't have a council that is all bad. We have a couple of good councillors on there, but they are so overridden and so bullied by the majority agenda of the developers that they're trapped. They can't actually do much. So it ended up having to go into the courts. Now, all of this cost the Hamilton taxpayers monies because the mayor fought tooth and nail, had lawyers. It cost money, you know?
My understanding is Joanna Chapman spent over $30,000 of her own money
she
as
did.
Well. And that's not democracy. No private citizen should have to spend that kind
right.
of money to hold elected representatives accountable for their action. Yeah, and you also commented that certainly not all of our city councillors are bad. And that's one of the things that CAN has done, is we actually looked at some of the major decisions that our councillors have made over the last 3 years and ranked our councillors according to the decisions
Great.
That they made. What we did, as I mentioned before, CAN created a policy document in consultation with citizens in Hamilton, going around finding out what they were concerned about. And it was very difficult, actually, to find recorded votes that showed how each councillor voted, because the city clerk's office doesn't actually keep that information. We had to get that information through another grassroots organization called CATCH, Citizens at City Hall, which is a very dedicated group of individuals who attend city council meetings, attend committee meetings, take word-for-word minutes, something that the city hall itself doesn't even do, and records the votes to show how each city councilor votes on those committees and at city council. And from their information, we were able to find 12 important votes over the last 3 years and find out how each of the councillors voted on those things. And what we did was we compared their decisions to what a councillor who was in line with CAN's principles, which in fact are the concerns of the average Hamiltonian, because as I said, that information came from hundreds of Hamiltonians. And we then ranked our city councillors according to how many times they voted consistently with CAN principles. And we had councillors on there who never voted in the way that the citizens of Hamilton, as reflected by our CAN policy document, would have wanted to vote, all the way up to, I think we had one councillor who voted along with CAN principles on all but one vote.
Wow. And we have 15 councillors if you count the mayor. But one of the things that was mentioned, something you just talked about there, and I wanted to go back to. Let's go back to rating the councillors and how we have some that do agree. But I want to go back to the mayor and Ms. Chapman. Our mayor was charged, finally, with 41 counts of election overpayment. He pled guilty to 6. And after he pled guilty, he went out front and, you know, sort of basically straightened up and told the press that was there that he's vindicated, his integrity is intact. I personally, as I witnessed that, I found that absolutely amazing to watch. I have seen him, and I'll give you an example, that a piece of information that I witnessed, because I sit at City Council not as often as Ketch, but I sit there and record things and follow what goes on. And it's to do with a road budget. Now, I could be off on the figures. I think it was 18,000 or some small amount, but it was the remainder of the city's road budget. We have some great potholes happening in an area called Ward 8, where little old ladies were actually cracking their ribs by bouncing themselves off their steering wheels from the size of the potholes on the road. When this topic came up about the road budget, it just popped to the surface and floated for a second or two. Terry Whitehead, the counselor for Ward 8, immediately said, well, does this mean we're going to go and fix our potholes or in such, you know, terrible infrastructure? We've got some horrible infrastructure problems in the city itself before we start building infrastructure way back out there on the farmland. And the mayor waved him off, dismissed him. The decision had already been made. They just went through the motions. That whole budget was redirected to a place called Trinity Church Road. I went up there and I looked at it. It's a little blacktop. It wasn't even a blacktop, actually, when I went up there. It's 500 meters in length. One end is a dead end. The other end is a T-intersection. And I wondered, why on earth would that amount of money need to go to this little piece of gravel road? And while I'm standing there examining it, I almost got ran over by an 18-wheeled transport truck. We're talking two-lane gravel country roads. Transport trucks shouldn't even be on those roads. And when I did a little look around, I saw on the side of the truck, it said Hamilton Sod in great big letters. And this driver, I wouldn't say he was intentionally driving to run me over, but he made absolutely no effort to avoid me or to acknowledge that I was even there standing in the middle of the road. And because I was looking through my camera at a sod farm, you know, my attention was slightly distracted. I heard him. I looked up and there he was right in front of me. So I looked around all those farm areas and I noticed that most of them have been bought up, bought out for a company called Hamilton Sod. So why would you need so many sod farms? Well, obviously, my first guess would be for the development. But when you do sod farming, you strip all the top of the topsoil off that land, so it's absolutely dead. This is how you create dead farmland. So you can then say that farmland's no good. We're going to use it for a subdivision or a survey or suburbia because you can't farm on it. And this is one of the things that they've done that got around that little argument of why the land is no good. These are the things that people that don't sit in city council hour after hour, you'd never know that. I asked about that. I tried to chase it. I took pictures. I put it up on the independent media. Nobody cares. Yeah. Nobody's interested. That's just an example, folks, of what kind of stuff goes on in our council meetings and how things are sort of controlled by one person. So when you said we have some good councillors and we talked about how helpless they are, these decisions have been made before they even come up in council. And the other point about the clerk's office, when I saw Catch sitting at the press bench, and I'd been there a couple of years watching this and seeing amazing stuff, suddenly, I thought the first question was, why do they feel the need to be here? That's the major question. Well, you know, the notes and the minutes aren't posted, but somebody said to me, keeping a minute of the meetings is one thing. Doing a transcription in detail is another. Okay, I'll take that as an excuse. But I still think in the back of my mind that Ketch had to be there to tell people, inform people about all the stuff they're missing. And that's exactly what the independent media has had to do. So I'm thinking that no matter where you are when you hear this show, you might want to think about your own council. And if you get a chance during the day, because you're working, you usually don't get to see what goes on. But if you get a chance, send somebody down a few times and watch what goes on. And you might, if you see any comparisons to what we're talking about here, it's time to maybe start your own CAN group or sound the alarm bells because something's going on.
And it's really interesting because, as you just said, Maggie, there's a big difference between taking minutes and taking word-for-word notes. And not only does Catch take word-for-word notes of what people say, they will often include information about which counselors arrive late, which ones leave early, which ones get up in the middle of the meeting while a citizen is up addressing the committee and go to the bathroom or start talking to other counselors, which is very common on Hamilton City Council, that kind of very rude, ignorant behavior. And Catch notes all of that.
I'm going to do a plug for Hamilton Indie Media.
Currently, HamiltonIndieMedia.org is not functioning. The volunteers have kind of faded away. If anybody in Hamilton wants to start it up, just go to Indie Media. And Indie is spelled with a Y, so it's I-N-D-Y Media. You'll see links and news reports from all over the world.
When I sit down there at council, I take my video camera now, and I'm always audio taping for this show and for the web, but I wanted to get some of this stuff on video. And it's hilarious. I've videotaped counselors that are now gone in the middle of a meeting playing a video game on his portable little laptop. And for a while there, it got to be very difficult to go into city council because they thought I was, you know, hiding my agenda or hiding my equipment. I put it right out there in front for everyone to see. So if you go to Hamilton Indie Media, you'll see another version of Catch, which is more video and audio. So you can hear comments given in the tone and the inflection that they were first delivered, which I find very interesting. And you can get used to the counselors' voices. And if you're lucky and we have time, you can actually see some of the stuff that went on. So another point that reminds me of, when we're going back to only 19% voted and some of these decisions were being made are bad for our future and bad for the city and our infrastructure is literally blowing up. We had sewer pipes blowing sewage several times into people's basements, freezing in January. It's just, you know, these are wooden sewer pipes. That's how old they are. And they're putting infrastructure up on the escarpment there. So I think maybe Hamilton might be the only city in Canada that had a riot in its town council, right in City Hall chambers. People were so disgruntled, they walked in with signs and took over and disrupted the meeting because they were outraged at how the treatment of some of the citizens was dealt with by the council. People were being threatened that they would lose their housing, lose their homes if they didn't stop protesting. You mentioned at the beginning that there were some tree sitters trying to protest while they were going to do blasting on the escarpment. Very dangerous situation. And I happen to know that one of the tree sitters who has fled this province is still being hunted by our mayor and his lawyer. There's still money being spent to get this kid. For what reasons, I'm not sure, because he has no money. And the road's already going ahead, even though the road is failing because they built it on limestone quarry from the escarpment, which cannot hold the weight of the highway, let alone trucks on the highway. So that's another point that they didn't listen to. And for whatever his name is, I forget now, I think he called himself Clarence, running around out there wherever he is in Canada. He knows they're hunting him. My question would be, why are we spending the money hunting this kid? This is the kind of vindictiveness that we witness, and that's why there was a riot in City Town.
Yeah. But you know what? It's the young people who are the ones that have the daring, the young people who are going to make the changes. And I just actually want to take this opportunity to maybe tell the audience a little something about something else CAN is doing to empower our young people and make them realize the importance of getting involved. We recently received a grant of $1,000 from the Hamilton Community Foundation to run a program called Youth Vote in Hamilton area high schools just prior to the municipal election on November 13th, actually to invite teachers from high schools across the city to come pick up the curriculum document. We've prepared lessons about how municipal government works and how municipal elections work, and we're going to run a mock vote in the schools in Hamilton. We're going to try to set up all candidates' meetings in the schools so that the different candidates can come in and debate in front of the high school students, some of whom may actually be old enough to vote in the actual election, but all of whom will be old enough to vote in the next municipal election. And I think that's really important that we get those kids interested now and make them realize the importance of voting now. And what we're also hoping as a spinoff from this is that those kids will then go home to their parents and say to them, hey, did you vote last election? Are you going to vote this time? Who are you voting for? You know, these candidates, they came to my school and so-and-so seemed like a really good guy and had some really good ideas. You're voting for the other one? How come? That counselor said this. And so we're hoping that this will lead to some discussion around some dinner tables in Hamilton, and it may even help to increase voter turnout at this next election somewhat.
This show was originally recorded in 2005.
I think that's great that you're getting the kids involved, and I like the idea that it's, you know, if they can focus right on their own neighborhood, let them get involved with not a fictitious municipal election. Pay attention to the one that's right here, happening right here in our city, and educate yourselves a bit. And another plug for Catch, what Alice was describing is a tremendous, tremendous amount of work. I sit and watch these guys do this. It's just, you really have to be dedicated because it's a long, long time you're sitting there. Imagine transcribing 4 to 6 hours, five times a week. If there's kids that are free, and I know council meetings are usually 9:30 in the morning and by 1 or 2 they're done, but Start visiting City Hall. Sit down and watch. Make your own notes. And if you can find a way that can help cats do what they're doing without having to hand scribe everything, which one catch person told me took her 20 hours a week, and she was only there one meeting a week. And she did the most amazing transcriptions I've ever seen in my life. That's Marcia Duncan. I'm sure she's not going to like me mentioning her name, but she is a researcher here at McMaster University, and her work was superb, absolutely outstanding. So if you get a chance to read her kind of transcription, that's the level you should aim for, and trickle down from there, it's all good. So pay attention to what's going on locally. The poverty groups just recently held a couple of sessions for all those people that are running for the municipal election to express upon them or impress upon them the need to pay attention to poverty and why we have such poverty. Well, I think you could probably answer some questions as to why poverty is so high in Hamilton just by some of the economic decisions that are made. What are your Ken's views on that?
We're directing our resources into areas that we should not be, obviously. Social development is a huge area and that needs to be addressed in Hamilton. And as long as we're building new roads, new water pipes, and expanding our infrastructure into suburbia, we're not going to have the money to put into those social programs and help those people. So really, it's a matter of priorities. What are the priorities of our mayor? What are the priorities of our city councilors? Now, I was reading in the paper the other day that was cited as one of his four priorities, social development. But I would ask, has he made this a priority in the last 3 years? It's so easy to make promises at election time, but I think that people who are out there deciding who to vote for need to, if they have an incumbent, such as the mayor or an incumbent in their riding, they need to look at their past record, the decisions that they've made in the past, because that is the best indicator about the decisions that they're going to make in the future, not the promises that they make at election time.
In case kids don't know, and I'm sure they must know by now, and I won't say for you, Alice, but for me, I've been around long enough that things repeat, and the repetition that I see is politicians say one thing during an election, and they do exactly what they're supposed to do as they're dictated to once they're elected, and we've evidenced that by the Tory government provincially and the Liberal government provincially. So it's not, you know, it's on every level of government in Canada. We have lost what democracy is all about in this country. And we're talking about Hamilton's municipal election because it is a prime candidate and example of how we lost democracy and how information is kept from us and how things are made. So we've got voters saying, I can't vote. It doesn't make a difference. It doesn't change anything. Well, you have to vote because we have to change it. And the only way to change it, here's another thing that was brought to my attention. And I mentioned this earlier. We've got some good people out there that want to be counselors and are scared to death. What do you do about that?
That's a really hard one, Maggie, because as I mentioned earlier in the interview, in order to be successful in any election, not just in Hamilton, but in any city, in any province or country, you really need to have money to back you up. And it is very difficult to win an election without money. It's possible, but it is very difficult. And so that is something that has to be addressed, perhaps through some kind of Municipal Elections Act reform, reducing the amount of money that any one individual donor can get. With the limit being set at $750, let's face it, there aren't many people who can afford to give $750. But those who are friends with the people who can, they can amass huge quantities of money over the other people, and that generally will lead them to success in an election. So that is one of the things that definitely needs to be addressed. The whole issue of donations from corporations and unions also needs to be addressed. And I know these are things that the provincial government is looking at. I personally don't understand why they weren't able to be addressed in time for this election. Our governments move very, very slowly, and they're dragging their feet on this one. Hopefully they will do as they promise, and they will address this before the next municipal election in 4 years. But these are huge issues. And only once these issues are addressed will we really be able to see the beginning of a reestablishment of democracy in municipalities across this province.
Is there room for a catch program in every high school?
I would argue that there is. We do have in Ontario now, though, in our curriculum, a civics class. Unfortunately, it's only a half credit course. It's compulsory. kids take it when they're in grade 10, but it really probably should be a full year course, or at the very least a full semester course, possibly taken when the kids are a little bit older, maybe in their grade 11 or grade 12 year, because although some of the concepts are easily grasped by 15 or 16 year olds, some of them are a little bit more complex and would be better addressed, I think, at a slightly higher age. But those civics programs do address a lot of those issues. It just depends on the teacher that's teaching them, though, as well, and how they teach it. If they just hand out a textbook and have the kids read things and answer questions, or if they actually engage the kids in discussions and make them aware of what's going on in the world. And so that's another thing that, I mean, we could talk forever about that even, and in getting civics teachers more educated on the issues of government and what is happening in the world, because yeah. I suspect that even teachers, like any other segment of the population, a lot of them need some education as well as about what's going on
yeah,
in the world.
You're making me think. I was going to ask, what are they teaching these kids in civics classes? Are they teaching what's supposed to be there, or are they teaching what's really there?
Well, the curriculum document, it's an interesting document. It's divided into three sections: purposeful citizenship, active citizenship, and informed citizenship. And then under each of those categories, there are some specific examples of things that the students are expected to demonstrate and to have learned by the end of the course. Remember, this course is only 9 weeks long, though it's really hard to address a lot of these issues. Some of them are just really simple things, like how does a bill become a law? How does our House of Commons work? You know, should the Senate be an elected Senate? Questions like that. They don't really take on a lot of the issues around electoral reform and questions around, you know, are we truly a democracy? What are the things that influence democracy? One of the things that I always find interesting are the way that the textbooks define the various forms of government and how they present them. And as I'm sure you know, Maggie, and a lot of our listeners out there, just because you learned it in school and you read it in a textbook doesn't make it true. And so that's one of the things that I'm always talking to my kids about, and I pull out the civics textbook and I show them things and I talk to them about, is this real? Is this true? Do you believe this? Why do you believe this? Should you believe this? And try to get them to really start questioning everything they read and they hear and they see, because I think that's the most important part of a civic education, is to get kids to question everything.
Well, why don't we get them to be independent media?
That would be great. That would be great.
To be aware. It's good that they ask questions, but you know, I don't see where the answers are coming from when our own adult community is not being given the right answer and has no time to research. And I got to say, if I was in grade 10, I'd be bored. The minute you said, how does a bill become law and what goes on with the Senate, I mean, my eyes closed, you know?
Yeah. I don't spend a whole lot of time on those issues. The way I try to do it, Maggie, is I basically just, we talk about issues. We talk about things going on in the world. And I say, okay, now what are you going to do about it? And they come up with ideas. And I say, okay, so if you want to address that issue, you need to understand how laws are made and you need to understand how our government works. And I try to teach it to them in that context instead of sitting there and saying, okay, the bill goes through a first reading, then a second. Because the kids don't care about that. But what they do care about is how does this work so that I can change it?
Maybe they should be teaching why people are activists. Maybe they should all see our locally produced version of grassroots concrete.
Actually, last year, I held a student activism conference at my school, and we invited students from other schools to attend. We had a lot of different grassroots organizations and political organizations from across the city present workshops and set up information booths at the school, and it was a huge success. Definitely something I would like to run again in the future.
Okay, so we need more activists, but you can't be an activist until you have the information. You can't get the information from your mainstream sources. We've given you a couple of alternatives. How is the turnout for your CAN groups? You hold them in the evenings at the library or something?
Our meetings have been somewhat sporadic. For about the first year or so, they were fairly regular every month. But then once we gathered all the information that we needed, it was just a matter of starting to work on that information and get the information out. So our meetings over the last few months have generally been smaller, like working group or executive type meetings. If people are interested in getting involved in CAN, the best thing to do, first of all, is visit our website. And that is www.hamiltoncan.com. org. So if you visit our website, you can see our policy documents. You can see some of the things that we've been up to, things that we're planning in the future. There's lots of links on there to local media, mainstream and alternative media about local issues. And you can send us an email. Let us know that you want to get involved. Let us know what your skills, your talents, your abilities are, what your interests are, and we will find something for you. Even if you don't know what you want to get involved in, just call us and we'll say, okay, what kinds of things have you done in the past? And we'll find the perfect thing for you to do. So if getting involved is something that you're interested in, definitely give us a call because we have plenty of work that needs to get done.
What kind of groups, for example? What kind of things do different groups do?
Well, we have the Youth Can, first of all. So if there's any young people listening to this program between the ages of 14 and 24, you can get involved in Youth Can. And they are the ones that are running this Hamilton Youth Vote. It is a youth-led project. So even though I'm involved, I'm really only an advisor to those young people. And it's headed up by a MAC student, actually, Kathy Birch. She is the chair of Youth Can. So you can contact us if you're interested in getting involved in that, because again, we need more hands to be involved in the Youth Can. We also have people that work on policy. We have people that work on campaign materials, public relations. We need people for every aspect of running an organization that you can imagine. So again, if you're interested, please contact us. It's www.hamiltoncan.org. We have a link on there for you to email us. You can phone us. Our phone number is on there as well. Just get in touch and we'll find something for you to do with whatever amount of time you have to dedicate to this.
Are there any other groups that you know of in the city that are doing things like what CAN is doing?
Just about every grassroots organization in the city has a political agenda that they're trying to get across to people in the city. Ours is more general in that we're addressing a lot of different issues. We're not just addressing poverty. We're not just addressing the environment. We're not just addressing accountability and transparency in government. We're addressing all of these things. But there are tons of different grassroots organizations that have specific interests that they are attempting to get City Council to listen to and to get City Council to address. The only other organization that I know that is taking sort of a more like a broader approach to working on this election would be Hamilton District Labor Council. Their Political Action Committee has held a number of different meetings, including public meetings as well, to gather information from citizens about what they are interested in. And Hamilton District Labor Council is actually taking the extra step of endorsing specific candidates, something that CAN has not done to this point. We're just providing information so that people can make up their own minds about who they want to support, whereas Hamilton District Labor Council is making recommendations to people about who they should vote for. And I sat in on some of the Hamilton District Labor Council meetings that they held where they were gathering information about what people were concerned about, and the concerns that were raised at their meetings were identical to the concerns that were raised at ours. So I'm sure that a lot of the endorsements that come forward from HDLC would be similar to candidates that CAN would endorse if, in fact, we were going to do that.
Can you work together, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Like, personally, I chair CAN. I started it, and I'm also a member of Hamilton District Labor Council as a representative of the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation and a member of their Political Action Committee. So I've been able to go back and forth and share information with one group about what CAN's doing and then with CAN about what HDLC is doing. And there definitely has been some collaboration and sharing of ideas there. What we're doing, though, I think complements one another. CAN is providing information to electors to make their own decisions, whereas HDLC is gathering a lot of that information and making recommendations to electors, specifically to unionized members about who they should be voting for. But the things that HDLC is taking into consideration in making their recommendations are very similar to the things that CAN is concerned about. And those are the concerns that came forward from citizens of the city.
In the beginning of the interview here, we were talking about you were toying with the idea of starting a new political party, and I think you get this idea from a group in Vancouver. Has that idea disappeared or...
No, it hasn't disappeared entirely. It was just that the membership, and again, I want to emphasize, this is a grassroots group, and so really the evolution of this organization has been driven by the members, not by the leadership of the organization. The members were not comfortable with heading in that direction. They felt that a more effective way of accomplishing our goals was simply to inform and educate and inspire people to get involved and to learn and to vote, rather than to to run as an actual political party and have a slate of candidates that would be running. And that was just a decision that was made by the members of our organization.
Is there any website or writers or speakers that you can think of that you would suggest listeners get some information from that you've seen in your research that you think is informative and educating?
Well, I think one of the best websites out there is the Raise the Hammer website. I'm not sure if you're aware of, I'm sure you are, you're nodding. Raise the Hammer is an excellent organization, and they write, I believe, on about a weekly basis. They include information on there about what's going on in the city. And in 2004, they produced an annual report on what with recommendations from what they thought the city needed to address. Fabulous document. I wish that there was a way that there was money available to print that and put one in every mailbox in the city of Hamilton. You know, I don't like to waste paper, but that would certainly not be a waste of paper. It was an amazing document with lots of excellent recommendations. I'd hope that all of our city councilors had read it. I doubt that they have. But certainly anyone who is looking for more information about issues in Hamilton and the state of affairs of our government in Hamilton should visit the Raise the Hammer website. It's excellent information.
Okay, and I have to make a plug for public radio and free material because I deal a lot with the poverty groups in this city, and they don't have a computer. And a lot of people that are working poor don't have a computer. And so much of our information and research that I do is pulled off the Internet. Do you have any suggestions for a book they can go to the library?
Well, my suggestion, if they were going to go to the library, they can get on the Internet there. Because really, to get the most current information that is local, websites are probably one of the best sources of information. Catch's website, the Raise the Hammer website, CAN's website. In terms of print media, there's May Day Magazine. Listening to the radio, like CFMU, is going to be important because most people at least have a radio in their house. Unfortunately, there really isn't anything in the way of television that I can think of to really get good, unbiased, comprehensive information from. Again, so go to the library, go on the website, listen to radio stations like CFMU, pick up newspapers like View Magazine or May Day Magazine, which is found in a lot of businesses throughout downtown Hamilton and at the Sky Dragon Center on King William Street. Excellent sources of information, very provocative articles, very comprehensive articles, and those are the types of things that anybody can have access to.
We've been talking to Alice Smith, who is the organizer, and I don't know exactly what your title is now for the group CAN.
I just call myself the chair, I guess.
The chair of CAN. She has been the spearhead behind this organization, which is a real community-based organization, and it's gotten people active. So instead of getting mad and saying nothing can be done, you can go and talk to people like Alice. You can go and sit at City Hall. There are things you can do. You can take back your own democracy and your own control. Get informed and be active. Anything you'd like to say, Alice?
Again, I just want to reiterate that all social changes, all major sort of revolutions in society have occurred out of grassroots movements. And so by sitting around, watching TV and doing nothing, we are not going to see change. There's no point in complaining that we don't like the way the city is run and that we don't like the decisions that our city council and our mayor are making if we're not prepared to do anything about it. I just want to reiterate that all major social movements have started because of grassroots organizations, that they didn't start with a massive group of thousands of people making change. In fact, there's that Margaret Mead saying that it takes a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens to change the world, and that's the only thing that ever has. And so that's what I hope that Hamilton CAN will be, and I hope that we'll be able to inspire people to take the smallest step of just getting out and voting. Please don't sit around and complain that you don't like the way that the city is being run, that you don't like the decisions that the mayor and the city council are making. Just go vote. Get informed. Visit some of those websites that we talked about today and find out what's going on in the city and make a good decision, a decision that will help your city and help the people that are living in your city.
And don't forget, this time it's a 4-year run, folks, so
absolutely
one more year of
yeah,
bad news.
Exactly. That all the more incentive to get out and vote. We got to live with these people for 4 years. And municipal politics, a lot of people overlook the importance of municipal politics, but some of the decisions that have the greatest effect on our day-to-day lives are made by our municipal politicians. A lot of us, we think that, you know, the buck stops at the federal government or at the provincial government, but really the people that have the greatest impact on our lives every day are the people who are making decisions right here in our city.
Thank you, Alice Smith. And that's Can, and Can will and can change our local political environment. I want to thank Alice for coming in today and for giving us tons of information. It's been great.
Corruption is everywhere. Corruption is everywhere. People want a deal or a discount or a steal. Corruption is everywhere. Gray market satellite. Not supposed to have it, but you might. To reauthorize your car was never all that hard. Corruption. Corruption is everywhere. Corruption is everywhere. People want a deal or a discount or a steal. Corruption is everywhere. You have a small business. You write up everything as an expense. Every time we eat, you ask for the receipt. Corruption is everywhere. Corruption is everywhere. Corruption is everywhere. People want a deal or a discount or a steal. Corruption is everywhere.
And that, of course, was Lorraine Quinto with Corruption. Found it kind of cute and appropriate. Get your pens ready and your pencil ready, because I'm about to give you a whole list of contact emails and websites for some of the things that Alice and I discussed in that show. Catch website, Can, Hamilton Indie Media, Hamilton's for Progressive Development, CFMU. And if I've forgotten anything, somebody please send an email to oside.kojiko.ca and fill me in. Your pens ready? Okay, the Catch website is at www.hamiltoncatch.org. That's hamiltoncatch.org. CAN, Hamilton Community Action Network, and that's the group that Alice represents. Their website is http://www.hamiltoncan.org. That's hamiltoncan.org. The always there and been there forever for video, written word, audio, you name it, website is the Independent Media Center from Hamilton. And you can find them at http://hamilton.indymedia, all one word, and indie is spelled with a Y, I-N-D-Y, media.org. That's hamilton.indymedia.org. Hamiltonians for Progressive Development, otherwise called HPD, the business people that have been working with the Atropolis plan. Their website is http://www.progressivedevelopment.ca. That's Progressive Development, all one word, all lowercase, no space, .ca. And of course, your host show, The Other Side. Go to CFMU's website. You'll see a few programs there that are quite interesting. http://cfmu.mcmaster.ca. The Raise the Hammer website is http://www.raisethehammer.org. That's raisethehammer.org. Excellent site for an analytical review of information.
This is an announcement to ask you to attend Perverse Cities, a lecture given by Dr. Pamela Blaise. It's happening Monday, November the 7th at 7 p.m., and it's at the Unitarian Church, as always. This is another one of the great lectures provided by Spirit of Red Hill. These lectures are amazing. You will learn more than you ever learned before. The noted urban planner Dr. Pamela Blaze will deliver this year's Spirit of Red Hill Valley Lecture on Monday, November the 7th at 7:30 p.m. It's at the First Unitarian Church at 170 Dundurn Street South in Hamilton, and the doors will be open at 6:30. It's a free lecture. Dr. Blaze's book from 2010, Perverse Cities, Hidden Subsidies, Wonky Policy, and Urban Sprawl, has won critical praise, including being shortlisted for the Donner Prize. She suggests that urban planning has been focused on curbing urban sprawl by treating its symptoms and failing to recognize the market distortions and the flawed policy that drives sprawl. As a result of crude public policies, a wide range of urban goods and services are subject to inaccurate price signals, including housing, non-residential properties, transportation, and utilities. Mispricing creates hidden perverse subsidies and incentives that promote sprawl while discouraging more efficient and sustainable urban forms. You can get more information about her book by going to http://perversecities. That's all one word, P-E-R-V-E-R-S-E, cities.ca.
Redefining Radio. Syncopa Radio.